chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program this evening. We're going to start off with the Sean Hannity report about a whistleblower coming out and whistleblowing about the FBI. Boy, and then we're going to move on to some other things. Robert Barnes, we're going to end with some of his insights into the Ukraine, the Azov Battalion. Very, very interesting insights. But here we go with Sean Hannity.
Now tonight, a Hannity investigation. More developments have come to light surrounding Mr. Zero Experience Hunter Biden as multiple highly credible whistleblowers. Democrats love whistleblowers, right? They have now come forward to Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley detailing what they say is an effort from inside the FBI to discredit information about Hunter Biden and his nefarious foreign dealings. According to Grassley's letter to the FBI, quote, the allegations provided to my office appear to indicate that there was a scheme in place among certain FBI officials to undermine derogatory information connected to Hunter Biden by falsely suggesting it was disinformation. Now, it was just the latest evidence of a two-tier justice system inside the FBI and this politicized Department of Justice, and how these institutions are both politicized. And that's not all. According to a new report from the Washington Examiner, Delaware police considered Hunter Biden the victim back in 2018 when his handgun was tossed near a grocery store by his sister-in-law, Hallie Biden. No charges ever filed in the incident. No charges connected to him lying on his gun application. And tonight, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has also sent a letter to the FBI director, Christopher Wray, pressing the Bureau for more transparency and laying out more evidence to their efforts to undermine the investigation into Hunter Biden and the Biden family syndicate. Here with reaction, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. By the way, I have noticed, and many are taking note, tens of millions of dollars from outside of Wisconsin is flowing into your state to try to take you out. You've become the number one target for Democrats in this election cycle. I don't know if that's an honor or a distinction, but it's happening. Is that true?
It's over $44 million so far. So Ron Johnson for Senate.com. I'm going to need a lot of help if you want me to continue my investigations.
Yeah, I'm sure that everybody in Wisconsin loves people outside of Wisconsin telling them who to vote for. All right, this is important because if you go back to 2016, there was a big lie perpetrated. Hillary Clinton's bought and paid for dirty Russian dossier then becomes the basis of a FISA application. It's unverifiable. It's been debunked. Four separate warrants, never verified or verifiable. Then in the lead up to the 2020 election, weeks before, we get this laptop from hell. Now it's been verified. And yet still the FBI and people in the media and the Democratic Party and all these intel officials, past and present, oh, no, this looks like Russian disinformation. So they use Russia in two elections in two different ways to impact our elections. How many more times are the Democrats going to play that game and get away with it?
Oh, it's their playbook. Let me first thank the whistleblowers for coming forward. We need a lot more whistleblowers inside the FBI, Department of Justice, the federal health agencies. If we're going to restore credibility to these agencies, we need to know the truth, and that's going to require whistleblowers. But, you know, unfortunately, Sean, I don't find this revelation shocking. It's outrageous. There's so many things that were suspicious. You know, for example, Senator Grassley and I both received briefings we didn't request from the FBI. They were later leaked to the Washington Post to smear us and discredit our our investigation. I'll never forget Peter Strzok's text to Lisa Page, said that our sisters are leaking like mad, feeling scorned, worried, and political. They're kicking into overdrive. Now we're finding out from these whistleblowers that the FBI actually had, you know, I don't know what you would call it, but individuals specifically taking derogatory information against Hunter Biden, downgrading it to end the investigations. Were they responsible talking to their intelligence sisters of the 51 intelligence officials that came forward and engaged in their own information operation when they said that Hunter Biden's laptop had all the earmarks of a Russian information operation? This is dirty. This is corrupt. We need answers. And Christopher Wray, Attorney General Merrick Garland, these people have to come clean and tell us what we know. We may need a special counsel on this one.
Well, I would agree with you, but why would we have any confidence in them? Because you mentioned, well, we could talk about Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, and a whole list of other people. Nobody's ever held accountable. And then time passes and they move on. Christopher Wray hasn't cleaned up the FBI. He hasn't done it. He hasn't lifted a finger to take on the abuse of power that took place with the Russian lie or the lies to the FISA court on four separate occasions. He hasn't taken on any of the people that said Hunter Biden's laptop was disinformation. He hasn't done anything to clean everything up. And as far as the Department of Justice, okay, what happened on January 6th was wrong. I said it in real time. I said it that night on this show. I'll say it again tonight. But so are the 574 riots in the summer of 2020 that, if I'm not mistaken, Kamala Harris defended and said, beware, take note. They won't stop. They shouldn't stop. We're not going to stop. And then promoted a bail fund for the rioters. How come that's not important? How come the people on videotape rioting and burning down, you know, businesses and police precincts, how come those people haven't been held accountable?
Because we have highly partisan political actors inside these federal agencies, and that's why we need to get to the bottom of this. This is why we need more whistleblowers coming forward, patriots, that actually appreciate their agencies, want to see credibility and integrity restored to them. The only way we're going to restore that credibility, because I don't trust Christopher Wray, remember under his leadership, the FBI briefed the Senate Intel Committee in March of 2018 that the Steele dossier had integrity, even though the FBI knew it was Russian disinformation. He's the one that was there while this operation was apparently set up. He's the one that potentially directed the briefing to Senator Grassley and I that was then leaked and then used to smear us. So, no, I don't trust him, but he's the one we've got to call on to answer some questions.
All right. Thank you, Senator Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. We're going to be watching your election.
There are reports out there and different opinions about Trump's opposition not allowing him to run again. And they're using every device and every shading of the truth that they can to stop him from running. I have a few problems with Trump. Overall, there was no decision but to put him in versus Hillary. There was no, man, Trump proved to be very effective in trying to organize and stop the thievery that's happening at our U.S. Treasury. So Trump did a lot of good. His ego can get away with him. And that's really when I have a problem. And the insurrection. The Insurrection Act should have been followed through on Minneapolis and Portland when they started burning those cities, and Seattle also. But he didn't do that. He didn't stand up and do that. And other presidents in the past have used the Insurrection Act to stop and quell riots like that did occur in those cities. But anyway, we're going to go with Lawrence interview, and he says likely Trump will be a defendant the rest of his life. These are the things, and then I'm going to follow that with Representative Kinzinger. He's on that January 6th. And he's going to give us guarantees. He's saying that Trump might do what he did on January 6th again. So, I mean, these people are really something else. But here we go with those interviews. And just to let you know, they don't want Trump in there. He was he didn't play a game with them. He started saving us money. He did a lot of good things. So they don't want him in there at all. And he's saying that he's going to take down the civil service and clean up the swamp again. So I just don't know how that's going to work out. But anyway, we have these opinions being expressed by Lawrence with an interview. And here we go next.
As 76-year-old defendant Donald Trump looks at the final chapter of his life, he knows tonight that he is likely to spend the rest of his life as a defendant. He is already a defendant multiple times in several different kinds of civil lawsuits, including, most importantly and most dangerously to Donald Trump, lawsuits brought against defendant Trump by Capitol Police officers who are suing Donald Trump for causing their injuries during the January 6th attack on the Capitol. It could take years for those lawsuits to come to trial. The verdicts in those lawsuits could be appealed for years. If Donald Trump loses those lawsuits, he will not only spend years in the appeals process of the lawsuits. When the appeals process is exhausted, he will then spend years trying to avoid payment of what will surely be hundreds of millions of dollars in judgments that would leave Donald Trump penniless. And what I just described could easily account for every day of Donald Trump's life between now and at least his 90th birthday, if he reaches it. And then there is the possibility of criminal defendant Donald Trump in District Attorney Fawnie Willis's grand jury investigation in Georgia and now in the Justice Department's criminal investigation of Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. Since Donald Trump values nothing more than money, he actually has more to lose in the civil cases than in the criminal cases. The civil cases could leave Donald Trump penniless. The criminal cases could leave Donald Trump a convicted criminal, but, and I know this will disappoint many who have high hopes for this, but as a former president, he would probably never hear the sound of being locked in a jail cell. If Donald Trump is convicted of crimes, for practical purposes, as a former president of the United States, with a very large Secret Service detail that would have to go to prison with him to fulfill their legal obligation to protect him, Donald Trump would most likely be given some kind of suspended sentence and possibly a home confinement sentence in which the Secret Service detail would become, in effect, his jailers as well as his protectors. But if Donald Trump were to lose the money that pays for the home where he might be confined as a convicted criminal for the rest of his life, losing that money would be much more painful for Donald Trump. And that is why the most urgent legal matter facing Donald Trump's lawyers tonight is their appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia to throw out the lawsuits filed by Capitol Police officers against Donald Trump, saying that Donald Trump was simply doing his job as president when he spoke to a rally on January 6th and, quote, according to the lawyers, engaged in open discussion and debate about the integrity of the 2020 election. Donald Trump's lawyers have to convince the appeals court that the trial judge, Amit Mehta, was wrong when he allowed the lawsuits to proceed because, according to Trump's lawyers, President Trump's January 6th rally speech, this is the original judge's view of Donald Trump's speech. According to that, that speech was akin to telling an excited mob that corn dealers starve the poor in front of the corn dealer's home. Judge Mehta said that Donald Trump is not immune from the lawsuits because he was not acting in his official capacity as president during the January 6th rally when he told his followers to go to the Capitol and fight like hell. Judge Mehta said Trump's actions, quote, do not relate to his duties of faithfully executing the laws, conducting foreign affairs, commanding the armed forces, or managing the executive branch. They entirely concern his efforts to remain in office for a second term. These are unofficial acts. Donald Trump is much more worried tonight about losing all of his money in the January 6th civil lawsuits after Kevin McCarthy is subpoenaed as a witness and tells the jury in those lawsuits that Donald Trump admitted to him that Donald Trump was responsible for the attack on the Capitol, which is the very essence of those lawsuits.
I asked him personally today, does he hold responsibility for what happened? Does he feel bad about what happened? He told me he does have some responsibility for what happened. And he needs to acknowledge that.
Kevin McCarthy cannot avoid testifying in the civil cases about that discussion he had with Donald Trump after the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And Kevin McCarthy's testimony alone, that story right there, can destroy the rest of Donald Trump's life by convincing a jury to render Donald Trump penniless. And Kevin McCarthy has no legal options for resisting a subpoena to testify in that case or to the criminal grand jury that the Justice Department is using in Washington, D.C. to investigate Donald Trump. As I said last night, with each passing day, we'll be hearing more about the witnesses who are appearing before that grand jury. And tonight, CNN is reporting that a Trump Justice Department official is cooperating with the grand jury. The former Justice Department staffer Ken Klukowski worked very closely at the Justice Department with Jeffrey Clark, who was hoping to be named acting attorney general by Donald Trump so that he could more effectively conspire with Donald Trump to overturn the presidential election. CNN is also reporting that the Justice Department is preparing right now to go to court whenever necessary to overrule any possible claims of executive privilege made by former Trump White House staffers who will be questioned in the grand jury. CNN reports that Vice President Mike Pence's Chief of Staff Mark Short and the Vice President's Counsel Greg Jacob reached agreements with prosecutors before their grand jury testimony, quote, to steer clear of potential privilege issues with the expectations that they could return to those questions at a later date, the people briefed on the matter said.
That was Lawrence on his program, and they're trying to use every sleight of hand and underhanded technique to knock him out and keep him out from running in 2024. They sense that the 2022 midterms is going to be a slaughter and promote especially a majority in the House for the Republicans. So here we go with Republican Kinsinger, who is on that committee, and he's saying they might do this thing again, and Trump might even be the one that'll do it. This is how ridiculously accusatory that this whole thing has gotten. But here we go with Kinsinger.
We got this report this week that Mick Mulvaney and Steve Mnuchin have both recently sat down for interviews with the January 6th committee, and that other former Trump administration officials are in negotiations to do the same. So what's the line of inquiry that you're pursuing with these former Trump officials, and what have you learned from them or hope to learn from them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that I can't go into, unfortunately. I wish, but look, we are continuing the investigation. That's what I can say is, you know, we had our set of hearings, which I think was very important for laying in front of the American people a lot of a story that I realized later they've never heard. You know, there, a lot of times when you're in the middle of this investigation, there's stuff that we knew that we kind of look around and say, well, maybe not everybody knew this. And so what we're doing now is completing some of those, I guess, crossing some of those T's. We're looking in other areas of interest. Obviously, we have an interest in, you know, was the 25th Amendment close to being invoked? In my hearing, frankly, last Thursday, we put out a letter by Secretary Scalia, Eugene Scalia, where he had mentioned talking about the president needing to meet with the cabinet, which I think was kind of a way of threatening the 25th Amendment. So there's a lot more to go.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting, and because you've now seen this sort of floodgate open for a lot of folks to come forward and want to speak to the committee. It's been about a year since the committee started its investigation, and a lot of those Trump officials that you recently met with, or negotiations to meet with, were any of them previously reluctant, to sit for an interview? And could you attribute their, how should we say, recent willingness, to come and cooperate with the committee as a sign of that the committee is opening up some cans that they want to make sure they have a bit of control or at least some say in?
I think it's a good way to put it. I mean, I think it's that. I think it's now the committee is actually being taken seriously because for the last, whatever, 9 or 10 months, it was really developing the investigation. It didn't have much of a public face. And so, you know, it was written off by a lot of people. And now, obviously, it's made a difference. Obviously, this is quite important. I think you do have people now that say, I want to put my side in. Look, without going into any more details, you know, there are people that have given us answers that maybe don't really square now, as we have had more people that came in and talked to us. And so we'll want to revisit with some of those folks, see if their memory clears up a little bit. And you look about, you know, somebody like Cassidy Hutchison, by the way, and I've got to tell you, Michael, you know, I mean, you know the Republican caucus as well as I do. Cassidy Hutchison, 25, 26 years old. Sarah Matthews, about the same age. Caroline Edwards, the Capitol Police officer. Have more courage combined than probably every Republican man in the U.S. House of Representatives and Senate. And I think the story that's going to be written about this committee is the courage of young staffers, particularly young women, but young staffers to come forward and tell the truth is going to be like the basic equivalent of the whistleblowers for Nixon.
No, I couldn't agree with you more on that. It is amazing to see these young women stand on behalf of their country as opposed to what the elected officials in the Republican caucus are doing. We've also gotten word that Donald Trump is the subject of the DOJ's ongoing investigation. So what do you think about that and the DOJ? And will there or should there should they move forward with a criminal investigation of the former president at this point?
I think absolutely. Look, I think we have to understand as a country that no matter what happens, there's going to be blowback. This isn't our fault. It's not the DOJ's fault. It's one person's fault, Donald Trump, that put the country in a position where we have to make a decision. Are we going to prosecute or not? We being the Department of Justice. I think this, look, we never want to get in a position where all, you know, the new administration prosecutes the last administration ever because that is, you know, a banana republic. But that's very different when there's an attempted coup. And I think if we say, basically, look, you know, bygones be bygones. The coup didn't succeed. And as long as a coup doesn't succeed, you can get away with it. I mean, I guarantee you somebody's going to try this again, and maybe even Trump himself if he runs again. This has to be pursued. Yes, it's going to be a bit unsteady for the country. But I think the biggest thing that would be unsteady for the country is saying the president's above the law, and covering up justice and obstructing justice is actually the way to go to be safe. We have to do this.
This has gotten also very personal for you, Adam. Your work with the committee has made you a target of threats from Trump loyalists and his supporters, that the MAGA crazy crowd, and trying to impact and influence the investigation. But you've stood steady. You posted some of those messages on Twitter earlier this month. Let's take a listen to some of the messages that you've received recently.
Going to come protest in front of your house this weekend. You know who your family is, and we're going to get you.
Wrath of the Lord God Almighty come upon you, your health, your family, your home, your livelihood. And I pray, if it be God's will, that you suffer.
These are vile threats to you and your family, man. I mean, these people, I cannot imagine what motivates you at this point to stay true to the cause and to move forward despite receiving this ignorant, vile, stupid responses from people in support of Donald Trump. How do you do it, man? How do you make this work every day for you?
Some of it, my friend, is anger, honestly. Some of it is, look, you're going to make that threat and think I'm going to back down. Look, you may somehow think that Donald Trump is a symbol of manliness. That's fine, whatever, if you believe that. But I got to tell you, if you think you can intimidate me, you can't. When I hear that woman, I mean, by the way, that woman talking about the Lord God, she truly believes that Jesus Christ, the guy I follow, wants her to pray against me and my family for telling the truth. She truly believes that. She's not being misled even by political leaders. Her pastor is failing her. So religious leaders are failing their flock at large numbers. That keeps me motivated to look. I'm just going to tell the truth because I know this, my kid, that by the way, even since we put that out, we've had dozens of threats against him. He's 6 months old, Michael. People that have threatened to kill him. Yeah. I mean, it's the depth of evil. I look at that and say, not only is that not going to intimidate me, I know that someday he's going to be proud to be a Kinzinger because his dad will have stood for something right. And I know that these people will be ashamed of what they said. It's just pure evil. That's all it is.
Well, his dad has stood for something right and is doing right on behalf of the country. We thank you, Republican Representative Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. It's a real pleasure. Thank you so much, my friend.
Coming up next is just about the last few minutes of Erica Kahn and Jeff Rentz. And they've been pioneering. If you go to Rentz.com, R-E-N-S-E.com, and go to the right column and look up Erica Kahn's interviews with Jeff, you'll see a plethora of differing interviews over the years. And they've really been outing this amyloidosis problem. And so we've got to get into that. We've got to start waking up to what's going on with these vaccine shots. But anyway, here we go with Jeff Rentz and Erica Kahn, and they've been doing about three programs a week on this subject, and they've done some wonderful reporting. Here we go next with them.
Well, again, a spike protein is you know, once it's been denated, it's not that hard to denature the spike protein. It's the misfolded proteins that are coming from the body.
But there's a misfold. Let's get this straight. A misfolded protein will cause another protein to misfold. It doesn't have to be a spike protein. Once
right.
It gets going, it's a cascade.
Proteins being produced within the body, within the cells, they're unable to fold properly.
So
and then they collapse and they aggregate together and form these long
right.
strands.
And you don't want any of these, I think there were 31 kinds, they said, or something like that, that were capable of this easy misfolding
yes.
or spike protein
yep.
induced. So the point is, they're going to start taking human bodies now, which have these misfolded, they have amyloidosis, they don't care. And they're going to dissolve them or turn them into some other kind of rudimentary fertilizer and use this to grow your own garden crops at home. You better start reading labels on bags of fertilizer. I don't know how common this is going to become, but it seems to be a growth industry already. And the timing is very suspicious.
Well, they're either anticipating a lot of life. Now, I don't know what kind of chemical concoction they're using to liquefy these bodies and
we
whether
know.
That chemical is capable
of deactivating a spike protein.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of research has gone into that, so I don't know.
Does it necessarily deactivate all proteins? Because, as you said, there may be 31 proteins that, once they're misfolded, they look for other proteins of like manner to misfold as well. And proteins can live a long time.
Well, the denatured proteins, these misfolded ones, yeah, they're virtually indestructible. You have to go to great lengths to deactivate their infectivity.
And then people that are dissolving bodies and drying them out and desiccating them and turning them into some other kinds of fertilizer, which I saw a video on that the other day. I just don't hear any talk about denaturing any proteins in the body.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't want my produce coming from a field that was fertilized with human remains, especially with this going on.
And
it's really telling that nobody really outside of a small group of people is talking about this. I mean, Jessica Rose mentioned it in passing in one of her Substack articles last week, but this should be a front page news. People are being injected with something that's causing them to produce a prion generating protein.
Well, it's front page news here, and I hope all of you will share tonight's program, last Monday's program, and the video. Last Monday was Why You Must Understand Amyloidosis and Amyloid Plaques. Tonight we'll come up with another title, and that'll be two that are extremely important. This is maybe the big one.
I think
maybe
it is.
Maybe the big one.
This is bad. I mean, and they've been, you know, looking at weaponizing prions or aerosolizing prions as a bioweapon for quite some time. It's not hard to find research on that, and I think they might have done
right.
it.
Right. So when
they
go up and out the chimney at the crematory, you don't want to be near there breathing and inhaling them. No. No, no. Nope. Anything you want to add? I think we've covered it all very thoroughly, and it's there. We could talk scientific jargon, but we put it on the table straight so everyone can understand it, I think.
Yeah, I'm astonished that there's, at last count, 207 vaccines for this spike protein, either recombinant vaccines.
Same spike
with these prion-generating sites on it in clinical trials right now.
And we don't know if there are only seven. We know seven have been determined to exist so far.
Mm-hmm.
Those sites on a cleaved or broken open or unfolded spike protein, there may be 10, there may be 15, we don't know. But there are at least seven peptide sequences that are right there waiting to meet up with a protein in your body and misfold it and send it on its way to misfold others and to create fibrils and then ultimately clots or plaques. You
yep.
choose.
That's it.
Thanks, Erica. Good job.
Okay. My pleasure, Jeff. Have a good night.
Okay.
And misfolding of proteins is the problem, and that's what can be described as amyloidosis. And it can occur in the prion area also and called mad cow disease. So we're up against a very, very, this spike protein is causing a lot of illness and a lot of damage to a lot of people that are taking it. So that's what we've got to deal with there. And we've got to try to overcome that and do everything that we can to stop this. General Keane is up next. Stuart Varney interviewed him, and he's saying things like, we are right on top of this, where all the Russians are, and we've continuously providing Ukraine with all that information. Sounds like we're actually at war with the Russians. We're actively promoting and giving them strategic and tactical information on a daily basis, on a second-by-second, minute-by-minute basis. But here we go with what General King said. This is not good.
Military officials in Ukraine are looking to use Western weapons to liberate the Kherson region. That's the first major city captured by Russian forces when the war first began. General Jack Keane is with me this morning. General, it seems to me the Ukrainians are gearing up for a major offensive, a large-scale counterattack. Is that the state of play right now?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Stuart. This is something that's been in the planning and preparation stages now for weeks. And it looks like they're beginning to set in motion what they consider to be a counteroffensive to take back Kherson City and the surrounding area, which would be a major accomplishment if they're able to pull this off. And certainly the weapons that the United States has been providing to them and the Europeans as well, particularly the HIMARS, has really helped them quite a bit in terms of defeating Russian artillery, which has been the main weapon system that the Russians have been using to take territory away from the Ukrainians in the eastern Donbass region. This is a major, major movement by the Ukrainians, Stuart, and the outcome is uncertain. But what we do know is the Ukrainians have the skill. They've got the will. We believe they have the people to do it. And now they also have some weapon systems that are going to help them do it. It's going to be a very tough fight. But this will help determine whether this war is going to be protracted for years to come, or will the Ukrainians really be able to take territory back and drive the Russians out.
Do we have any military people, Americans, on the ground in Ukraine?
I don't think we do. But I'll tell you what, this much I do know, because I have received briefings in the Pentagon. We provide them exquisite intelligence on a regular basis, not just once in a while. I'm talking about continuously. We have full visibility of that battlefield. If there's a Russian unit that's moving on that battlefield, we have visibility of it, and we are telling that to the Ukrainians. We're using all of our sources to be able to do that, from imagery, surveillance of the battlefield. We obviously have satellites. We have airplanes that can stand off, not over Ukrainian territory to do it, signals intelligence, and we also have other assets as well. So, yes, we are helping them. I don't believe we have people on the ground, but I don't know for sure. I don't think we need to have, frankly.
Let's change, that's not the subject, but the theater of operations. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Mark Milley, has a warning about China's military. He says the message is the Chinese military in the air, the sea, have become significantly more and noticeably more aggressive in this region. And they're trying to expand their influence throughout the region, and that has potential consequences, and not necessarily favorable to our allies and partners in the region. That's a strong statement from General Milley. What do you make of it, General Keane?
Yes. Well, he is out in the region. He's going to have a major meeting with all the chiefs of defense in terms of our allies and partners later this week in Sydney, Australia. He's currently in Indonesia. And he sounded an alarm, something that we've been talking about here for some time. President Xi, and he's been in power now over 10 years, certainly changed things rather dramatically in terms of the intimidation and coercion of Taiwan across the Taiwan Straits, and also our allies, and to include what General Milley is talking about, in harassing our airplanes and our ships. The aggressiveness is obvious. And I think what we have to consider seriously is that President Xi, while he's watching the war in Ukraine and he's watching Russia have a lot of problems with it, President Xi, as opposed to pausing and slowing down his desire to take over Taiwan, may indeed be increasing it in terms of time frame. Why? Because we are right now outgunned and outmanned in the region, but he knows full well the United States is working very hard to correct that. That'll take a few years to do so, but that encourages him maybe to do something sooner rather than later. Second problem is, you're aware of this, President Xi has economic setbacks right now, and they're destined to get worse. And it may be better for him to do something sooner, again, rather than later economically, as well as it is militarily. That's the concern we have. And Milley certainly is going to be out there trying to shore up our allies to work together in the region to push back on China's aggression.
That's just the kind of analysis that we need. Thank you very much indeed, General, for supplying it. Always appreciate it. See you again soon, I hope. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're really in deep water in this Ukraine. We shouldn't be that deeply involved. But anyway, we are. But okay, coming up next is Robert Barnes. The Azov battalion is a Ukrainian battalion that recently they're in prison under Russian guard, and all of a sudden they get blown up. We don't know who did that. But anyway, Robert Barnes brings that out, and also he gets into many of these celebrities are getting sick and so forth. But and he has other items too on his plate. But here we go with Robert Barnes.
Welcome back to InfoWars. This is the Alex Jones Show, hosted by Robert Barnes. More information coming out of the continued debacle and disaster that is the war in Ukraine. In this latest report, it appears that American-supplied weapons were used by Ukraine to bomb their own prisoners held in Russian territory. In other words, this is a place where various members of the Azov Battalion and various Ukrainian soldiers were being held as either prisoners of war or, in some cases, prisoners under the local authority of the various Donbass locally organized militias and governments that felt that some of these people had committed crimes against them leading up to the conflict. Well, apparently, Ukraine has used using American-provided weapons, has bombed it and killed a bunch of them. So there are three questions that arise. The first question is, was this done by accident, that Ukraine didn't know what was happening? Second, was it somehow not done by Ukraine? Why would Russia do this on its own territory or territory it controls? And third, could it have been done deliberately by Ukraine? Well, the latter part can't be completely ruled out because of the very unusual politics we have in Ukraine and the unusual dynamics of who some of those people were that were being held in custody. So the Azov Battalion dates back to a range of neo-Nazi militias formed to perpetuate the Maidan Revolution in 2014 in Ukraine. But it has an even longer heritage and history. In fact, you could arguably go all the way back a century to the 1920s. So the land of Ukraine in the language of Russian literally means, and other languages actually means just borderlands. It was always the borderlands between competing great empires, the Russian Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Polish-Lithuanian Empire, and so forth, and occasionally the German Empire, and as well the Ottoman Turkish Empire. So this borderlands was made up of a wide range of people. You had Cossacks in the east. You had Russians in part of the country. You had Ukrainians in other parts of the country. You had Turks and Greeks in Odessa and other parts along the border and next to the Black Sea. You had Romanians in another part of the country. Indeed, Deputy Premier Medvedev, the former president of Russia, recently put out two maps. And one map had a map of what he thinks Zelensky thinks is going to have happen, and somebody made a meme of it, of basically someone taking cocaine and making a map of Ukraine all the way back to being old Ukraine plus Crimea. And then he put up what he thinks the West wants to do with the map, or really thinks is going to happen with the map. And much of it was divvied up between Poland and Romania and Hungary, and then Russia, and then just a little bit around Kiev that would actually be Ukraine. That history reflects a long history that's unique to Ukraine. But as it relates to the potential for this to have been a deliberate attack by Ukrainian military officials on their own army members, and particularly Azov Battalion members being held prisoner in Russia, is that they might have had information that they didn't want publicly exposed. Remember, the Azov Battalion was holding out for a long time in Mariupol under that factory, even without basic food and medicine, until they find, and there were multiple ridiculously desperate efforts to help people escape from there, including helicopters that would go in and get shot down, other attempts that would completely fail, efforts by sea that would fail. So there was clearly an obsession, so much so that many people speculated that maybe what is in there is some prominent French or other general or British or American general maybe down there. That did not turn out to be the case. So the question is, what was it they wanted to hide to keep those Azov Battalion members from surrendering? Well, then they did ultimately surrender. They pretended it was like a retreat or something, but they surrendered unconditionally. And then they were ultimately are going to be going on trial or maybe sent back to Ukraine in a prisoner swap. So why would they might want to kill their own Azov Battalion members and soldiers now that they're in Russian captivity? What might they know that might be a problem? Well, this goes all the way back to the long history of the rise of fascism within the Western Ukrainian ultranationalism that began in the late teens and in the early 20s, that was a different brand of Ukrainian nationalism than existed in the eastern and central parts of the country. It was, in fact, many people in the central and eastern part of Ukraine wanted nothing to do with this ultranationalistic quasi-fascistic mechanism that was being promoted by the ultranationalist under Stepan Bandera and others. They would go in the 1920s, they would wage mostly war against the Poles, who had disparate influence in that part of Ukraine, try to assassinate and successfully kill various Polish leaders, leading to the arrest of Stepan Bandera and others. and that and then ultimately Bandera would be released by the Nazis when the Nazis went into Ukraine, and the Ukrainian ultranationalists of the Bandera, or the Banderaites as they're called, ultimately aligned with the Nazis and committed some of the most horrific violations of human rights and basic liberty that could be imagined in World War II. To give you an idea of how bad it was, even the Nazis thought it was horrendous. The Nazis were like, that's a little too far. If it goes a little too far for the Nazis, maybe you've gone a little too far. That was the nature of the Banderite divisions. After the end of World War II, the CIA recruited Stepan Bandera. The CIA recruited many of the neo-Nazis. The CIA actually recruited actual Nazis, created a spy network in Central and Eastern Europe that was made up of ex-Nazis. So Nazis or fascists or their allies were a critical part of what was going on with the CIA in Europe. They had a whole group that they left behind to try to be able to, theoretically, to defend against the Russian and Soviet invasion, but in fact, to actually promote destabilization regimes they didn't like. This happened in a range of countries. There were specific names of operations given to this. Blew up in different places in Italy in the early 1980s with a wide range of scandals connected to it. But a part of that group was the ultra-nationalist neo-Nazis of Western Ukraine. So, Soviet Union collapses. What does the West do? It re-engages that same group. Indeed, the principal propagandist for some of the ideas now believed by all kinds of Ukrainian nationalists were actually propagated by Harvard and other institutions in the West associated with this ultra-nationalist, fascistic, neo-Nazi regime, including the myth of the Soviet famine was designed to target Ukrainians by ethnicity. Utterly false. The famines that took place under Stalin, in fact, there were famines that took place under Lenin, were a combination of incompetency and an attempt to attack independent peasant farmers. And the primary targets were Cossacks and Kulaks, not Ukrainians by ethnicity. In fact, more died on a per capita basis outside of Ukraine than died in Ukraine. The great journalist who covered this, who was exposing the fraud that the New York Times was at the time, never made it specific to Ukraine and made it clear it was across southern Russia, the Black Belt wheat-growing regions of Russia, as well as what is part of Ukraine. And it wasn't even very strong in the far western part of Ukraine, which is not the breadbasket of Ukraine anyway. So, but that mythology was built by the CIA allied groups and associates and institutions here in the West. So we re-engaged them in the early 90s, went into bed with them to help create the first color revolution in 2004. And when we got nervous that we needed better allies, George Soros, as he did when he was a kid, along with CIA and other MI6 and other Western intelligence agencies and aligned groups, got together and helped back and propagate and support a rising neo-Nazi militia group, often recruiting from prisons and recruiting hooligans from various soccer games and other mob-related groups. That's who created the Azov Battalion in 2014 with the aid of critical oligarchs in Ukraine to promote and propagate the Western agenda in Ukraine, using Ukraine as a de facto colony to engage in bioweapon experimentation and the destabilization of Russia, because the globalists hate Russia because of their independence, because of Putin's unwillingness to engage in woke globalism and his dislike of it. At a fundamental and core level, Soros has hated Putin since for as long as anyone can remember. He hates Putin even more than he hates Trump. So the problem is somebody in that group that may have been in that prison, and it may have just been one or two, but there's no better way to take somebody out than to take out a whole bunch of people to disguise what you're up to. So this accidental bombing by Ukraine of their own soldiers in the Azov Battalion held in a prison on Russian-occupied territory, we can't rule out the possibility it was actually intentional and deliberate. When we come back, we're going to be discussing more vaccine deaths that keep happening or appear to be vaccine deaths for superstars and celebrities around the world. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. This is Robert Barnes, guest host. Later up, we're going to be discussing more vaccine deaths coming to celebrities and stars and sports players around the globe. But next, Shakira finds herself facing potential years in prison over alleged tax fraud in the case pending apparently in Spain. Tax cases have often been utilized to target political dissidents and other outsiders. Indeed, most countries in the world no longer imprison people for tax issues. In America, we have two major restraints on tax charges. Those are the good faith defense and the reliance defense that are unique to criminal tax law in general. Why do we have this? Well, because we don't want people sent to prison for simply owing a debt, nor do we want people sent to prison for simple disagreement with the government. So as long as you have, in fact, a legitimate belief that what you were doing was lawful, a good faith belief, then you can be found not guilty, even if your belief may have been incorrect, even if they think your belief, the IRS and the courts think your belief is crazy. That doesn't matter. All that matters is that you sincerely believe it. Also, a reliance defense, which is a defense upon by advice with attorneys, accountants, or other professionals, and consequently, that's another grounds by which you can justifiably get acquitted of any tax charge, because, again, we don't want disagreement about the law to be the grounds for imprisonment in America generally, unless, of course, you're Steve Bannon, and then we carve out an exception, much as the Travis County, Texas court is carving out an exception in the defamation cases proceeding with him. Indeed, there was an article today in the Texas Monthly that suggested that Alex Jones had foregone a First Amendment defense. That's completely and utterly false. This is another journalist who cannot take the time to actually read the cases and read what the Texas Court of Appeals said in this case. What the Texas Court of Appeals said, to give people a full understanding of what's happening here, aside from the due process violations, privacy violations, jury trial right violations, right to confront accusers, all of that, the other violations that are occurring here go to the core of First Amendment protection. The theory is this. Let's say you articulate an idea that is different than what the government believes. The government calls it false. You can now be accused of misinformation. Whether or not it is in fact misinformation is secondary. All that matters is you said something the government doesn't agree with. That's part one. Part two, you persuade any group of people out there that your questions are legitimate questions, and they have questions as well. Part three, somebody who feels upset or offended by your viewpoints, emotionally distressed or anguished by your viewpoints, can now sue you based on however many people ever heard your ideas in the first place and believe them now. That is the core of the case. It doesn't require you to say a specifically false fact about a specific person. It doesn't even require you to identify anybody at all by name. What the Texas Court of Appeals said was that is if someone could look them up on the internet and possibly find them, then the statement concerns them merely because it concerns a topic that they have an interest in. That's how extraordinary and extreme this was. Indeed, of all the people that purportedly believe certain things about Sandy Hook, how many of those people even knew the names of any of the people that are now suing Alex Jones? Because Alex Jones isn't the one who ever called him by name ever. So what that's the important. The First Amendment has been at the forefront of this case. It has been litigated repeatedly. It is preserved in the record. These are journalists trying to pretend that what's happening to Alex Jones couldn't possibly happen to them. And what they're really relying upon is political power brokers being the gatekeepers, being on their side so that it doesn't matter, so that it won't ever happen to them. They're really relying upon the corruption of our legal process to protect them, not the rule of law to protect them, because the rule of law is what the corrupt political processes are busy changing. So you say something a whole bunch of people disagree with. Those people who disagree with it, note that the government also disagrees with you, they can sue you into bankruptcy and oblivion. That's the theory and premise. And that was fully litigated before any of the default issues were even came up in the case. So the First Amendment is still fundamental and essential to the case of Alex Jones and will continue to be. And journalists who pretend he somehow isn't raising that and that somehow isn't part of it are lying to themselves, trying to say, this can't happen to me. Don't worry, this can't happen to me. Patting themselves on the back, hugging themselves foolishly, because yes, it can happen to you, and it will happen to you if you are a dissident source of information, if you are a heretic out there communicating heretical information that questions and challenges the government's narrative on any set of topics. So all of them should be alert and awake and quit fooling themselves in that process. In other news, The extraordinary ability of the Biden administration to play Humpty Dumpty continues. As Humpty Dumpty said, a word is what I say it is. And that is how a drug that's a therapeutic, that's actually a gene therapy, suddenly, magically, miraculously gets called a vaccine, even though it doesn't inoculate you from the disease, even though it isn't in fact safe, even though it isn't in fact effective, even though it in fact doesn't prevent transmission, even though increasingly more places are reporting that the vaccinated are reporting higher rates of hospitalization, higher rates of COVID, higher rates of death, higher rates of serious disability than the unvaccinated. Much in the same way when it came out that there had been 2 quarters of economic decline in GDP. The GDP turned negative in the first quarter of 2022 and then stayed negative in the second quarter of 2022. Historically, universally, even William Jefferson Clinton, who had difficulty remembering what it is, admitted that that is a recession back in 2000. Well, now the Biden administration says, no. That's not what recession means. Recession means what I say it is, which apparently is no longer what a recession means. As we face these 1970-style economics, continue to recommend George Gammon and other sources that will be daily providing information to you on the economic fallout and ramifications. But look to the 1970s as probably the closest historical parallel to what we're facing, to constant stagflation, economic decline, economic stagnation with high inflation. That those two are likely to continue to be parallel as we move forward. And in the hypocritical day of the week message, we have the District of Columbia mayor, the same District of Columbia mayor who refused to allow the National Guard to be present or anyone else on January 6th, the same D.C. mayor that was culpable for the extraordinary lack of an unusual lack of security present that day necessary to facilitate the events on January 6th for them to even occur in the first instance, now says she wants the National Guard out because illegal immigrants are coming to D.C. So it turns out the District of Columbia only wants enough illegal immigrants to be able to give them some Ethiopian food and serve them some exotic foods and help drive some Ubers and drive some taxis and be able to be available for some maid service and that. They don't want actual waves of illegal immigrants coming into their community in the way the people in D.C. have brought about illegal immigration in massive waves in states like Texas and Arizona. And what are some of the complaints that she and the mayor of New York are making? They're the complaints conservatives have made for a long time, which is if you're going to have this level of immigration, at least make it legal. If it's not legal, it shouldn't be allowed. Number one, respect for the rule of law. Number two, why should working class communities on the border in Texas and then throughout the South and Midwest, because that's where it's been disproportionately impacted. It's working class folks who see their wages decline. It's working class folks who have their school system effectively put under pressure because of increasing student participation from those who haven't paid taxes in the first instance. It's their roads under pressure, their buildings under pressure, their political infrastructure under pressure, their criminal justice system under pressure. They've been bearing all the burden and getting none of the benefit. And now that the District of Columbia has to get some of the burden for all the benefit they've been getting over the years, including their ties and connections to companies getting rich and getting fat off of illegal immigration, including people connected to illicit activities and enterprises doing the same, because D.C. is the capital of such activities in this country, sadly and unfortunately, due to the power-mad nature of the people who occupy positions of power there. They're finally having to pay the price, and their hypocrisy is getting exposed. When we come back after the break, vaccine deaths continue to skyrocket at an extraordinary rate, including hitting so many sports stars, so many celebrities, so many public personalities, so many people that everybody knows that they can't hide and run from it anymore. Talk about those vaccine deaths when we come back after the break.